I'm Lauren.
And I'm Cheryl.
And on this episode of Lit Chicks Read, we're chatting A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. Are you ready? Cheryl, I'm so thrilled we're finally getting to chat this book. I have you to thank, right?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, you may have been also influenced by other people, I can't say, but I do know that I've been pressuring you to read it for a while.
You have, and for some reason, it's been all over the place lately, and it piqued my interest, but I don't know if it was you or one of my other friends who was like, I'm afraid you're not going to like it, just because it's fantasy, of course.
Right.
But I said, there's lots of fantasy novels that I love. I loved Harry Potter. I loved Hunger Games. I loved Twilight.
So, very few of women of our age range didn't love Twilight at one time or another.
I was Team Edward. So,
yeah, me too.
So, to me, I was like, you know what? It's been a while since I've done a fantasy novel series. And I'm so happy that I did, because I swear this is by far one of the probably my most favorite series I have ever read. So I'm going to say a big thank you to you for getting me started on this. Oh. I'm still not over it. We're obviously only talking about the first book today, but I have an ACOTAR-shaped hole in my heart right now. It's like,
isn't that what I said? I had
a haze shaped
hole in my heart after the idea of you. Yes.
Yes.
we're gonna end up with hearts like Swiss cheese with all these characters.
Literally, I love this series so much. So today we're just chatting book one.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna apologize. My voice is I'm getting over some hoarseness, so I might sound a little different than I have in the past episodes. But
it sounds sultry, actually.
I feel like it's that Phoebe Buffay.
You know,
Are you a Friends fan?
Yes.
Yes. When she's saying smelly cats or sexy.
And it sounds so good. And yeah. Then she gets over the cold and tries so hard to get it back.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's kind of what I have going on here. So I apologize.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It's a different side to your voice.
Yeah. But I'm so psyched to be chatting this book. I freaking love it. So
yeah,
get into it.
Okay. And so because this is the first of a series, we're going to try really hard to keep it to just this book in our chat. We hope we don't accidentally give anything away from further on. We will try hard. We will maybe get it edited out if we do it. But yes, there's things that happen in the books after this one that definitely can change your mind about some of the events and characters in this first book. But we're going to talk about this one as if we don't know that stuff that's coming.
Right. Really try.
You really try. So, Lauren, because you had a cold, I know you are just drinking water, right? Keep your throat.
I am. Just water today. Although, I mean, I probably should have done a shot of whiskey. That's good for a sore throat, right?
I think it is, especially if you chase it with a little lemon or do like a hot toddy with the whiskey.
I should have done that. What are you drinking?
I had to go with a fairy wine theme.
How did I know it was on theme?
Yeah. Of course. We know that Feyre drinks fizzy fairy wine a couple of times in here. Although I don't think what I have is going to have the same effect, because I think I probably would have needed to add a shot of absinthe or something in there to get.
Yeah, because that makes her like super drunk, right?
Super drunk.
Very.
Yeah, especially the second one. Yeah.
Yes.
So this isn't that, but here, I saved it. I've saved this noise for you.
Ooh, ready? Woo! Love it.
There we go. So
it's some sparkling wine.
Some sparkling pink wine and mixed with a bit of a peach wine.
All you need is the fairy clothes to go along with it. Oh, we should have dressed up.
I am wearing flowers.
You
so
are.
That's a little bit spring court, maybe.
A little bit. I love the dresses that they depict.
What about the lack of
dresses, I should say.
The ones that are just two strips of fabric.
Just sounds very like, I don't know, I don't know.
You know what they remind me of, actually, is Princess Leia when she's captive by Jabba in Return of the Jedi. And she's wearing like that white bikini, but the skirt of it is basically how they describe it. It's like just pieces of fabric that get cut all the way up to her hips.
Yes.
Do you remember that? So that's sort of what I pictured in my head.
That's what I pictured too. Yes, for sure. Something similar along those lines. Very like Greek goddess-like. That was in my head too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And how appropriate. Because we were talking a bit offline about how influenced by myth this story is. So that's actually very appropriate.
Yeah.
Most people call it a Beauty and the Beast retelling, which is what the author does as well. But with a few other things mixed in there. So obvious Beauty and the Beast stuff when it's, you know, she's falling in love with her captor who's a beast, but really he's a beautiful man. And actually, I think in my head, I picture him a lot like, what is the guy's name from Beauty and the Beast? What's his name at when he's just a man? It's not Eric. Not? It's that's the bad guy.
Yeah, not the bad guy. Oh, what's his name?
I don't remember. Shoot. I'm going to think of it like as soon as we're done here. But anyway, that's kind of how I picture Tamlin. Like the long flowing hair. Blonde hair, you know, like that's kind of how I'm picturing him. So Beauty and the Beast, she's going to live with this beast. She's in a beautiful place. Amazing library, etc. But then we also have two other legends that are inspiration that she worked in here. So one is Norwegian. It's called East of the Sun, West of the Moon. And it's about a beast who's also a man who comes to a family, poor family, and talks to the father asking to take his daughter. And she goes to live in his enchanted palace and all very similar to what happens to Feyre. And then there's another legend. It's a Scottish legend called Tamlin, which is clearly where Tamlin's name comes from.
There you go,
But that one is very, you'll listen to this. I'll just read you like a tiny little summary of it. And it's so, so similar. So there's a mortal woman who encounters a mysterious man. They have a little love affair. She's pregnant with his child. And then she finds him again. And she finds out that he's a captive to the fairies. The fairy queen was like enchanted by his beauty and turned his heart to stone.
Oh, look at that.
And he's one of their captives. And every 7 years, they have to give one of their captives as like a tithe to hell, which in this story, we have the 7 times 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. And the way to rescue him is that the girl in the story has to hold on to him on Halloween, pull him from his white horse, and he's going to change into different beasts. And if she can hold on to him through all of that, then he'll sort of be rescued and she can stay with him. So Sarah J. Maas actually names those three stories as being sort of inspiration and things she pulled from to put this story together.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that. I definitely definitely Beauty and the Beast vibes. Yep. Also got a little Hunger Games vibes.
Yes.
Like the towards the end, right? With all of that. Yeah.
And the very beginning. She's, you know, the girl going out to hunt to support her family.
Right. And on that note, so let's talk a little bit about that. Can I tell you the one of the things that frustrated me with her family dynamic?
Yes.
Feyre is the youngest sister.
Uh-huh. Yep.
That really bothered me because I'm a firstborn and therefore I do feel some responsibility for my younger sibling. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to slap Nesta across her face and be like, what is wrong with you? You're sending out your youngest sister to do, you know, like basically support the family.
Like, what does that family do all day? What do they do all day?
Right.
Like, the father is, like, maybe carving his little sculptures now and then. But what are the girls doing?
Right. Nothing. And I
would be bored.
I would be, too. But it really frustrated me that relied on Feyre, who's the youngest. So how old is she, actually?
So she's 19 when we meet her.
Okay.
But they were, you know, they were very well off when she was young. Then her mother died of typhus when she was 8. So when Feyre was 8, her mother made her promise to look after the family. When she was 8.
Eight.
So she had two older sisters and a father who was perfectly fine and healthy and successful at that point. And her mother makes her make this promise. And as Feyre says, you know, your promise is your bond. Like, that's their most important thing. So she has been trying to live up to this for the past 11 years. So They were still rich for a little while after the mom died, but they lost their fortune at age when she was 11, and their money lasted just a little bit longer. And then it was at age 14 is when she started hunting.
Right. Okay. 14.
So it's been
stuck out somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're so like, she's going out there every day finding food for them. She's the only one that's trying. Elaine is like occasionally gardening, but not even like vegetables.
Right.
Like you like gardening, like plant something to feed your family maybe, but she plants flowers.
Right.
And the sisters are so whiny all the time. Like, I need a new cloak. I need new boots. And
yeah. Yeah. My, my opinion of Nesta was not very good in this
book. No.
At all.
There's a few things that kind of intrigued me about her. Can I read you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I didn't like her because of what we've just said. Like she's mean. She's the mean one, right?
Right.
Like Elaine is the nice one and Fair is the capable one, I guess, the breadwinner.
Which like if you think birth order, not accurate.
Not you know accurate what I mean? At all, totally. But yeah, Nesta's the mean one. She has lots of resentment, especially to their father, because she thinks, A, he could have tried harder to save their mother, like by going to get healers, whatever. And then she's mad that he never essentially lifted a finger to help support them.
Right.
But there's some descriptions about Nesta that are really intriguing. And as we find out more about her in later in the series, which I won't talk about now, but it makes so much sense when you go back to the beginning here. So there's descriptions of Nesta as, I'd forgotten how cunning her eyes were, how cold. She'd been made differently from something harder and stronger than bone and blood. She was as different from the humans around us as I had become.
Oh, huh. That's a little foreshadowing.
It is a little foreshadowing.
We won't say any more, but that's...
We won't. Yeah. And we know that she didn't fall for when Tamlin took Feyre away.
Right.
And he glamored everybody. So essentially, you know, made them believe the story that Feyre had gone off to live with a sick aunt. It didn't work on her.
Right,
like,
right.
It just
yeah,
didn't...
she didn't buy it.
That's right. It says... She says, I'd never heard of a glamour not working, but Nesta's mind was so entirely her own. She had put up such strong walls of steel and iron and ashwood that even a High Lord's magic couldn't pierce them.
Huh.
And then one more thing I have here. So this is after Nesta sends Feyre back to do what she can do to tell Tamlin that she loves him, etc. And she says, you know, I'll send back word if it's safe. I'll come back. And Nesta says, don't bother. I don't think I'd be particularly fond of fairies. Try to send word once it's safe, and if it ever is, Father and Elaine can have this place. I think I'd like to see what else is out there, what a woman might do with a fortune and a good name. No limits, I thought. There were no limits to what Nesta might do, what she might make of herself once she found a place to call her own. I prayed I would be lucky enough to see it. So you know there's more to her than we get in this book, but she really just does come off as mean otherwise.
Right. Mean and not kind of bossy. Mean and bossy. And I just picture her as like sitting there bossing everyone around and not lifting a finger.
Like the ugly stepsisters in Cinderella.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. While Cinderella's like, you know, cleaning and doing all the things. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah,
they're
that bothered
feeling
me.
Entitled. Yeah. That did bother me too. And Elaine is just kind of like,
there.
vapid, right? Like there just doesn't seem much to her. She's pretty and she's nice.
Right, right. And granted, this is the impression we're just getting first book. Now,
that's right.
We've obviously
that's
read
right.
on. We suggest you read on too. Because there's so much more to their stories.
And we will have so much more to say about them later.
Right, in later episodes. But
Yeah, I know that it's... So it not only bothers me that they do that they make Feyre essentially support them, but they don't give her any appreciation for it either. Like they treat her so badly still, you know? They don't seem to have any appreciation or recognition for what she's doing.
Right.
So
yeah, she reminded me very much of a Katniss Evergreen.
Yeah.
Like that's in my, that's like what I pictured reading.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of similarities between the two of them.
Even visually, like she has that sort of similar color hair. She braids her hair before she goes out. She's got her bow slung over her shoulder. Yeah.
Very much so. That's like what I envisioned in my head reading. You know, again, good with the bow and arrow. And then as we get on, you know, later into Under the Mountain, everything that she goes through there, she's very smart. I mean, I sure as hell would not survive.
No, she's super skilled. She's even skilled before that. Like she's skilled in hunting. But remember when she goes and catches the Suriel?
Yes. Yes.
And I do. So she gets like, because she's heard that this creature can will tell you the truth about anything. So yes. She's trying to get more information about what's happening in Prithian.
Yes.
And she puts out the like snares and raw chickens, and she ends up talking to Suriel, but also shows the Suriel mercy when she frees it before these other baddies come.
Right.
But I like that bit when right after that, it's where her humor is starting to come out, when she's comfortable there in the Spring Court, and she starts joking around with Tamlin and Lucien more. Mm-hmm. And she says something like, they're like, so you caught the Suriel? And she's like, is it supposed to be hard?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which totally reminded me of Legally Blonde.
Yeah. I was just going to say, yeah. Like it's hard? Yeah. That also brings me to, I really loved her relationship with Lucien in particular.
Yeah.
In this book.
Starts out rough,
but they really do develop a great friendship. And I love that.
Yeah. It probably starts around that time, right? Because he sort of baits her into going to catch the Suriel, and then he doesn't give her the easiest method of catching it that is possible. So she finds out later from, what's her name? The servant?
Alice,
yes. Finds out from Alice. She's like, you know, you could have just given it a new cloak. Like, it would just yeah. come.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, after that, they just, I don't know, they joke back and forth. She spends more time with him, Lucien, than Tamlin for the whole first part of the book.
Right. They have kind of like a brother-sister bond kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's a good way to put it. Yeah. It's not at all like a male-female romantic thing at all.
No, I feel like he started to really respect her and her him, especially after that serial moment.
Yeah, totally. Do you remember that joke when it's after that, but she's talking about the things she learned from the Suriel, and she said something about, it said, you would like it if I brushed you and rubbed your belly or something regarding Tamlin. And they just start cracking up, and Lucien's like, did you just make a joke?
Yeah, yeah.
It's where it just sort of breaks the ice after that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Feyre's in this place. She has left the kind of crappy situation she had at home. She still feels guilt about that because of the promise she made to her mother. But Tamlin reassures her that actually he's provided for them. So they think that she's taking care of the sick aunt, but he's arranged for it that they're essentially now back to living in relative comfort and wealth. So they're actually better taken care of now than when she was with him. And so that kind of reassures her, I think, and she's able to just relax. Yes. Instead of trying to get away or feeling like she needs to get back to them. We know there's one part where Tamlin gives her the gift of fairy sight, and she can actually see everything without the glamour that kind of dulls everything.
Yes.
And everything seems so magical. And then she realizes that this place that she thought was essentially empty, with just like a few servants wandering around here and there, is actually very full of people.
Very full, yes.
There's fairies all over the place. And she's like, so like that time that I was sneaking out, there were people, they're like, oh yeah, everyone was just watching.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes.
Pretty funny. But she starts to actually enjoy herself there.
And she paints.
And she starts to paint. So the painting language it's pretty heavy-handed in the book. Like almost every time she sees something, she's like, ooh, could I paint that? Or, ooh, I would never even try to paint that. Or those colors are not even possible. Like it's really drilled into us that Feyre wants to paint. Yes. And then she does start painting and starts to kind of get out some, it's like therapy for her, I think.
Well, what I also think is, so she can't read. We learn.
She can't read.
We learn.
Another crappy thing that her sisters don't teach her to read because at the time that they sort of, you know, because they were so well off, they weren't going to go to like the village school. They were going to the fancy school, but the age she was when everything happened meant that she just never got to the point of beyond very, very basic reading.
Right. So she, I'm hoping I'm not mixing up my books. She starts to teach herself here.
Yes. Okay. So Tamlin,
I don't want to say anything I shouldn't
you're
say.
You're good. You're good.
Good. I'm good. She starts to read.
Yep. She makes like a list. She starts going through books and she starts making a list of the words she doesn't know. And then she's going to look it up because, of course, this being a Beauty and the Beast retelling, Tamlin has this huge, amazing library.
Right.
And this is when she's still thinking that she wants to get a message to her family. So this is before she knows that they are more safe.
Oh, right, right, right.
Okay. But yeah, the reason she wants to learn to read is so that she can get a message to them.
But what I like about that, you know, you said she's kind of getting comfortable, right? I feel like in the spring court, she's able to do things that she wasn't able to because mm-hmm. of the responsibility she had on herself right. back home, right? Yeah. In the mortal realm. And yeah. so she can start to paint, and she has more paints than the few basic colors she had, right? Back home, yep. Yep. right? Didn't she only have like a handful of colors?
Yeah, Elaine had bought her like three primary colors or something.
Right. So yep. I feel like Farah, you know, once she kind of, she starts to feel comfortable and she can kind of come out of her shell and start to paint and be expressive that way, right? Like you said, it's therapy. She also can start to learn to read. I feel like she has more opportunity.
Yeah,
really,
she's not spending 10 hours a day like
hunting to feed her family.
Trying to survive. Yeah. The only kind of like escape that she has, other than the brief period she has where they had enough money to buy those couple colors of paints, her only escape is like sleeping with the village boy to get like a little bit of an escape, you know, a couple of hours rolling around in the hay, basically.
Right.
That's all that she. Yeah, I don't fault her. That seemed like a good. That's actually very sex positive too. I quite like it that there's no stigma on that. Like it's right. just, you know, and she's not tied. She sees him later and he's happily married and she's like, good for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was like something that they both kind of needed, right? Didn't he have a great, right? I feel like I recall that something wasn't.
He had a better life, I think, than hers, but still lived in this poor right. village and he right. ended up marrying someone who was wealthier.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Right. So it was kind of like their escape from reality of their situations. So, you know.
Escape from reality. Yeah. The ghost.
Get yours, girl. You know, no one's judging. You gotta do what you gotta do. Everyone has needs. Farah.
That's right. Farah. Should we talk about Farah being like her name itself? I was like, well, you know, she's gonna become a fairy. Her name is Farah.
You know what? I never thought of that until you just
said. Oh, no?
Nope. That didn't even cross my mind. I love her name. I think it's so pretty. I'm like, oh,
I like it too. Name.
But I guess I never really thought about that.
Farah the fairy.
Farah the fairy.
Yeah. Not to be mistaken with the Tinkerbell kind of. Yes.
Right. She's a high fae.
Mm. Fairy with an E, not an I. Because those are very different things when you're talking about the people in the fantasy fandoms.
I was trying to explain that. To my mom, she was like, it's about fairies, like
Tinkerbell.
I'm like, no, this is sexy fairies. It's spelled F-A-E-I-R, you know, I-E-S. And she's like, okay.
It's different. Right. Just take our
Not
word
Tinkerbell.
For it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So we get to the point where they're finally in love. She's happy in the spring court, but there's still some kind of things that are happening around them. She realizes it's not just like all rosy. Ha ha, rosy.
Ha ha, get it.
didn't do that on purpose. But so all they've explained to her is that there is this blight, this sickness that's sort of affecting how magic works. And Tamlin, even being a High Lord, he still has some magic, but nothing compared to like his true power.
And this is also why he's masked too, right?
That's right. Yeah. So they say they were at a masquerade ball 49 years ago and mm-hmm. there was a surge of the magic or surge of the blight or something is what they say. And their masks all got stuck on there. She realizes at one point that it's only the spring court that has that. So if we look at Prithian, it's basically like the United Kingdom. That's what it looks like on the map. So we have a map in the beginning of the book and where Feyre is from is like the very southern part of England. Mm-hmm. And then with the spring court above it, there's seven courts in total. And there's one night called Callan Mai, which is like a big festival of fertility to bring fertility to the land.
It's a sex fest.
It is. It is. It's a sex fertility orgy. they've got to fertilize the land with their own sex magic. And she is warned to stay away. Like, this is not for you. This is humans shouldn't be there. They make
but
it sound
Tamlin
very. He has to go. He's mm-hmm. an essential part of
the High Lord
making that magic. Mm. But they warn her away. But so she initially is going to stay away, but she feels this pull in her. Like when the drums start beating for the music of it, she just feels like she has to go. So she puts on a robe. She goes, and when she gets there, she sees there's a bunch of fairies that don't have masks on. So she realizes that those ones are not from the Spring Court. So other fairies have come from other places to be there. And she gets kind of waylaid by these three bad fairies who are going to do bad, bad boy things. And a voice comes up behind her. That's about what it sounds like. It's a lot of descriptive purring. Purring. I can't purr. Can you purr?
No.
I can't purr.
There's a lot of right now. There's a lot of purring and prowling and growling by these characters.
I do picture his voice. Like, what does he say?
There you are. I've been looking for you. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hello. Book one. Sorry, we're book one.
That's okay. She turns around and she says, there was the most beautiful man I had ever seen. Mm-hmm. So this gorgeous, recent. So he saves her from the bad fairies and talks to her for a little bit. And she's drawn to him, but they do part eventually. And she goes back to the house. And that's the first night that Tamlin, like, I don't think he even kisses her then, does he? But he bites her neck. And he says, so the magic, apparently, at the peak of Kalanmai makes him choose a female. They mate, and that mating is what restores the magic to the land. And after they've done that, everybody else is free to do it as well. So yeah, basically big fairy orgy. But he smelled her because she was there, and he was going all around looking for her and couldn't find her because Lucien had found her after the Rhys thing and spirited her quickly back up to the house so she'd get out of the way. But he came and he like bit her neck to claim her. And after that is when they really start giving into the attraction between them. Mm-hmm. But it takes until like the very last night before we actually get an actual sex scene in this book. So it's quite a slow burn between
them.
It's
definitely a slow burn.
Yeah, it's when Tamlin is, Tamlin is going to send her away eventually because there's just been signs that this bad magic thing that she still doesn't know what it is. There's references to it being like a she. So she's trying to figure out who this she is, but she has no idea.
Amarantha?
Yes. So she doesn't find out that name, I think, until she comes back, right?
I don't really remember, but I mean, we all know. It's fine.
We all know. It's fine. It's all fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she... Rhys has met her at the Kalanmai, and then another time she is just having dinner with Lucien and Tamlin, and he comes in. They mask her, but he figures it out that she's there, and tries to get her name, try to figure out who she is and why Tamlin has her there. And we find out that he is, well, he's referred to as Amarantha's whore.
Yes.
And they cannot say anything good about him. He is the big bad of all the big bads of the fairies.
Right.
So Tamlin's very concerned that something's going to happen to Feyre. So he decides to send her back to her family. And it's the last night before she leaves that they finally have their intimate moment. Yeah. Which is pretty good. It's a pretty good scene. Although,
I know. Book one. Yep.
You're thinking forward. I know you are. And maybe everybody listening has read ahead, but just in case you haven't.
Well, I'm saying book one's great, but it's not my favorite. You got to keep going.
No, agreed. Agreed. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of just world building in this one.
Yeah. And makes sense because you need that in order to fully understand the next, four books. So yes,
right.
I get it. The same thing like Harry Potter, right? Like you got to build the world. There's a lot in this world, a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it has to build up, but
yeah,
we're getting to the part where, and I always say that this book, it's like the first half is just kind of slow, but it's really like once she gets under the mountain,
that's when it gets
really
good.
Kick up. And so I always say, like, I've had people message me and be like, I don't know, it's just kind of slow. Do I keep going? And I'm like, you have to at least get to like that last third of the book.
That's exactly right. One third. I just looked in my book.
Yeah. Because that's where things start to happen. And that's where things get good. Right. She has to go.
So she finds Alice back. She goes back to the Spring Court. Nobody's there this time, but she does find Alice, who's like scavenging through the wreckage of the house. And now Alice can tell her everything because it turns out that they were all like cursed. They weren't allowed to tell her what was happening. And that's why they were using words like the blight. And they couldn't just lay it all out that essentially Amarantha loves Tamlin, but Tamlin doesn't love her, and so she, but they're childhood friends, so she sent him back to live in his lands and said he had 7 times 7 years, so 49 years, which I think that refers back to that Tamlin legend.
Yep. Yep.
That I mentioned before. I think that's where she gets that 7 times 7. And then at the end of that, he has to come back. And if he still won't be with her, then, you know, they're basically all going to be captive. But she was essentially being nice to his court over any of the other ones, giving him a chance to live in his court, but then also gave him a, not really a riddle, but like a challenge by which he could free himself and his people. So saying that if you can find a human...
Oh, right. This is fairies. Very Beauty and the Beast. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you can find a human that hates fairies enough to kill one, but then have them fall in love with you.
Yes.
Then, you know, you're free. I don't know why she would even give him that out. Like, why would you even put that possibility out there?
Why does she even give Feyre that, the out of that riddle? I know.
I know. I think she just likes to play. I mean, there wouldn't be a plot for us if not for those things, right? But right, like, if you were really a true big bad villain, you just wouldn't give them those options.
No, I think she just likes the torture, you know?
So Alice shows her the secret magical way to get to under the mountain, which is in the middle of all of Prithian, and that's where Tamlin's being held. She gets captured right away.
Yeah, of course. Naturally.
Gets brought before Amarantha, and she gets these challenges set to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the challenges are a month apart, so she ends up being under the mountain for several months, and just like, I can't even imagine, like, she's in a cell, it's freezing cold, she gets crap food.
And awful chores, right?
Like, awful chores.
Yeah.
One of those, the one where she has to pick the lentils out of the ashes of Rhysand's fireplace, that one's from the legend of Cupid and Psyche as well. Oh, it's like meant to be this impossible challenge to complete. Yeah. But of course, Rhys helps her do it. And she has to do the, you know, scrubbing the hallways with dirty water.
Yeah, to that point, though, so let's talk about, Rhysand. So he comes in and she makes a, what do they call it in the book? A bargain.
A bargain.
Yes.
So that's after, the first challenge, the first one that she... We don't know exactly how long it is, but maybe days to weeks from when she first comes onto the mountain. She's beaten up badly, but Lucien comes and heals her.
Yes.
Because she's got her nose broken and stuff. And then this first actual challenge. Have you ever seen the movie Tremors?
No, but I'm not a big movie watcher, so.
Okay. I will send you some clips from it. But it's Kevin Bacon and Reba McEntire. And it's one of those, like, it's so bad, it's good.
Okay.
Movies from like, I don't want to say 1990-ish, but there's these big underground worms with big teeth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that are blind. They follow you by sound, and then they come and eat you. And the way that she ends up killing it's called the Mingard worm, the one in this book. The way that she ends up killing it is very much how they end up killing one of the worms in
Interesting.
Tremors.
I wonder if she got it.
Maybe. Right. It's one of those ones, like, I have to watch it every time it's on TV. It's like the not so guilty pleasure.
Because she basically takes the bones, right? So she finds that there's bones in, she's essentially like in its filth. Right?
Yeah. So it's digested creatures, it's eaten.
Yes.
And she's in the mud that is its shit.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. She's in its shit and she's grabbing bones from those it's eaten, right? And doesn't she stick them all like in the ground and it kind of falls on it, right?
That's right. So she's in like this pit and she tricks it by making it like blood mad.
Yeah.
Like a blood rage by cutting her palm.
Yes.
Why do people always cut their palms in?
I don't know, but that's not what I would cut. I would probably cut
maybe my
part on my leg, or like you need your hands. I don't know.
I know that would hurt for so long after. It's just like, doesn't Bella do the same thing in Twilight? She like cuts her palm in. When she's attracting the bad girl vampire. Remember in the snowy mountaintop scene?
I don't. It's been so long.
Oh, dang.
I really need to go.
She does. Yeah. I'm 99% sure because she cuts her palm.
Okay.
But yeah, they always cut their palms. What's with that? I would
write that
differently.
That would not be the place I cut.
No. But she does. And so she drives it wild and it's like racing towards her and it falls into this pit onto like essentially bone spikes.
Yes.
But when she jumps into the pit ahead of it, she gets one of the bone spikes in her arm too. So then after the challenge, she's sent back to her cave dungeon cave, whatever, under the mountain, and she gets crazy sick. Like, she's essentially in septic shock. Like, yes, she's going to die. And Lucien doesn't show up to heal her. So she figures that...
me.
Yeah, I think he says, he explains it later that he couldn't because, do you remember that he gave her a warning when the worm was like going to come out beside her at one point? And he's like, on your left. So Amarantha was mad at him.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And made Tamlin whip him and used her magic to slow the healing.
That's right.
So she, but she doesn't know that yet.
Right.
She just doesn't know, like, is he going to come? Maybe he's not. And Rhys comes instead and offers her this bargain.
Right.
So now we're getting into like the Persephone legend where it's like, you know, I'll do this if you come and live half your time with me.
Mm-hmm.
Bargains it down to
a week, a month.
Yes. A month. And then he'll heal her. And he does.
And that's when her tattoo forms, right? And there's like kind of an eye on the tattoo that he can kind of watch. That's at least how my impression of it, right?
Yes.
He can kind of watch, like, you know, what's going on. I love how the bargains make these tattoos on them, though.
I love it, too. That's a lot of people are mad about this. I feel like the series is very polarizing. And people that hate it, they claim or they feel... that's issues of consent, basically. So he kind of, you know, Rhys is a bit of a jerk in this one. He redeems himself later. We'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But he's trying to get her to agree to the bargain. And he like twists that bone shard in her arm. Do you remember that?
I don't.
That's pretty shitty because that hurt.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
And then he marks the bond on her.
Right.
So people say it's, you know, lack of consent. And then there's that scene where she's making out with Tamlin.
Mm.
In that little closet area.
Yes.
And then he comes in and he's doing it to protect her.
Right, because she's covered. He put all of the ink on her so that he would
she's
know
covered in paint.
If someone was to touch her, right?
And so that others would know, aka Tamlin would know that Rhys is only touching her like around her waist holding when she's dancing for him.
Right.
But Amarantha starts coming in. And so Rhys kisses her so that he can like make it convincing why her paint is all smeared. So people talk about consent in that too. But
that scene bothered me, not the consent part of it. I just feel that if Tamlin was able to sneak away, the thing he should not have been doing is kissing her. Like, it should be like, let's get out of here, you know?
Yes, exactly. It's like it's their first moment alone together in months.
Right.
You haven't seen each other since you put her in the carriage to go back home. And the first thing you do is try and have sex against the wall in this little tiny thing where you could be discovered. Like, priorities, man.
Right. And that's where I just feel like, I feel like that was probably your chance at something. And you didn't take it. You know what I mean?
Or at least talk to each other. Be like, something. I love you, blah, 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 blah. Something. But no, we'll just like bang, slam you up against a wall. And
Something. Yeah. So, I didn't, that kind of made me go, huh. All right.
Well, yeah.
Anyway.
It was interesting. But how do you feel about the whole thing where she is painted and in that skimpy Princess Leia skirt thing and drunk on fairy
basically
wine?
Basically being paraded around. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't love that.
Yeah.
But again, I think I had a better understanding because we get a little bit more of that later on, right? Like the understanding. So, but I didn't love that. It definitely felt icky to me.
Yeah, me too. Feels like, icky, skeevy. I don't know. But that's how we're supposed to feel about Rhys at this point.
Yes, correct. Correct. We're not, I ended this book not liking Rhys at all.
No.
I did not like him. I was happy that her and Tamlin were back together. And I really didn't like that bargain was made and that she was going to have to go and be with him for a week. Right.
Yep.
So I definitely finished the book like, ugh, you know, like there's still not that happily ever after. Right.
That's component. Right. They get like a happy for now. We've escaped from under the mountain and I freed your people.
Yes. Happy for now. Exactly. Yeah. But there's still her end of the bargain. So, I left this book not liking Rhys at all.
Yeah. He did a few nice things. Right.
He did.
But then he does these comp. Yeah. He's definitely the villain. Well, he's not as bad
in
as Amarantha, but he's a villain.
Right. Yeah. He is a villain. We also don't have his full story yet.
No. We don't.
So, you know.
There are hints, and we'll talk about those once we get to the next book. Right. But there are hints in this book that there's more to him than we think. But yeah, I don't think we're not really supposed to know those yet. We'll
No, because it's funny. Everyone who does read this first one sends me a message is like, oh my gosh, I can't stand Rhys.
Yep.
Hamlin is amazing. Hamlin. And I'm like, oh, you got to keep reading. You're going to change your mind next book. So if
you're listening and you haven't read, just keep going. We'll talk about that soon.
Keep reading. So she goes through all of these, which I said this to you earlier. The riddle Amarantha gave, I knew that right off the bat. I will say that was kind of my one thing. I'm like, the obvious answer is love.
Yes.
You know, and I'm like, how do you not get it? I felt like I was watching like a Wheel of Fortune where like they weren't getting the answer, but I knew it. I'm like, come on. So I was really
like, this book was first marketed as young adult, and then she rebranded it as new adult because really some of the content is a bit heavy.
I don't think I'd want
the sexual content's a bit much for teenagers. But I feel like some of the writing is very young adult, and that would be an example of it for me. Like that riddle is like something you would read in a kid's book.
Like it was so easy. But yeah.
I mean, it was nice writing. Like it rhymed nicely and it sounded nice, but I think the answer was like, so obvious.
But I did love, I mean, all of the challenges, I mean, very difficult, but the challenges she had to go through, I loved at the end how she realized that Tamlin's heart is made of stone, mm-hmm. right? So her mm-hmm. killing him wouldn't actually kill him. But let's talk about her becoming High Fae.
Uh-huh. So she's won, essentially. So she passed the worm challenge. She passed the tiny cleaning tasks she gave. She passed that riddle challenge, which she really only passed because of that bond with Rhys, right? Because he knew the answer. And then as she would reach for the wrong lover, it would cause a pain in her hand. So it's a good thing she had that there. And then she feels all guilty that she didn't earn it properly or whatever. But come on now. I think pulling in the help you can is part of being a good, smart individual, right? Yeah. Like use what you have available, including hints from friends is A-okay. When you're being held captive under the mountain along with an entire
Cheating's
race
okay
by a crazy fairy queen.
Exactly. I'll condone cheating in this.
Yes. So I actually am kind of sad we never actually find out, because Feyre doesn't know. We never actually find out that riddle from the second challenge. Like she starts trying to sound it out, but she never finishes. So we know what the answer was, 3 or whatever, but we don't actually know what the question was. But anyway, so she passes it. And then we get the stabbing thing where she has to kill 2 fairies. And the third one is Tamlin. And of course, there was a trick because we know that Amarantha wants Tamlin. So like, why would she let her kill him? Right.
Exactly.
So she does it. But then, of course, there was a trick in Amarantha's wording that it meant she didn't have to let them go immediately, blah, blah, blah. And so then she starts thrashing Feyre magically and like beats her to a pulp. During this beating, we have Rhys trying to help her. Like he comes twice trying to get Amarantha and free her, but she pins him too. And then right at the last second before Amarantha like breaks her spine, she says the answer is love. Mm-hmm. So now the magic is like it's an actual magic agreement, magic bond. So Amarantha doesn't get to choose. It just magically takes away the curse. And so Tamlin is restored to his full power. He kills her. But because she has already killed Feyre, something has to happen.
Right.
Now, what surprised me here, didn't it all surprise me that she was going to turn Fae? It surprised me who started the process. Do you remember that it was the High Lord of the Autumn Court is the first one that came and gave like the little jewel of magic? And we know that he's an ass because he's Lucien's father. We've heard some of that story from Lucien that his father and his brothers are terrible. And so I was like, oh, that guy, really?
Oh, you know what? That's right. What's his name?
Baron.
Baron? That's right.
But I don't know if we know that yet in this book. I don't know if we know his name, but it is Baron.
Right. Okay. Yes. Got it.
But yeah, that kind of surprised me. I mean, I guess Autumn Court and Spring Court were very close, but after Lucien left Autumn to go be with Tamlin in Spring, you know, it just seemed like another thing between them. And so, yeah, it surprised me that he came up first. But anyway, they all do it. They all give their little kernel of magic and turns Feyre into High Fae.
High Fae.
Yes.
Which is just the start of so much.
Like, it really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved that part. And again, having read the entire series, that's why if you haven't continued on yet, you have to, because there's so much more coming. There's just so much.
Yeah, I liked this book and it was enough to like pull me into the series.
Same.
But
at the end, yeah.
This book isn't like my favorite book of all time or even among them. I love it because it's my intro to the series, but two other books of the series, like I would probably make this one my least favorite.
I don't think this one, like if I had to rank them all, I don't think this is my least favorite. I felt like the novella was.
I guess
I understand it was kind of like a bridge, you know, but this would be like right there with that. But yes. I understand, right? So again, if it is something you just read, it is so important because there's so much backstory here that you do need in order to go forward. Otherwise, you're just going to be very confused. You know what I mean?
Like, totally.
It really is. It's world building. It's setting so much up. But yeah, so we end with her being High Fae and her saying, let's go home. So we end, the way I left this book, I was happy, obviously. Okay, now she's High Fae, knew there's more coming. Glad she's back with Tamlin. Mad about the Reese thing. Not mad, but you know, I'm like, ugh, we still have this asshole. You know what I mean? Amarantha's gone. You know, all these things.
Everybody else is free too. All the other courts are free to go back to their homes. Yep.
Right. So, but really, yeah, like the end is what sucked me into this book. It wasn't anything earlier on. It was really just the Hunger Games part for me, right? Because that, I would love to see that in a show or in a movie. I just feel like that part in particular,
would just
be so good to see play out on film. So I can only hope that at some point in time, we do, right?
I know. Yeah, we know there's an option out there. So it's been under development. It's been under development by one of our favorite showrunners, a showrunner creator of the Outlander series, which we both love. So it's under development, but it hasn't been greenlit yet. Is sort of where that's what we know of where it's at. So all we can do is sort of keep our fingers crossed that it keeps getting pushed forward and actually makes it. I think it's like, isn't it something crazy? Like 1% of all shows that have development done for them actually make it on screen.
I don't know about the percentage, but
it's some really low percentage. So
I feel like
let's all just keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah. I feel like a book like this, though, it can't be done wrong. You know what I mean?
Like it shouldn't be or it can't be.
No, it like can't be. Like I feel like there's such a fan base, right? That like if this is going to be made into a film, it needs to be done.
They better do it right.
So if we need to take that slow, I mean, we can just keep rereading and live in the, you know, fairy world. I'm telling you, I have a fairy hangover after finishing all of the books, but I really would love to see it play out. But again, I think it's going to be, it either would have to be a TV series that goes on for like ever, right? Like Outlander or like a series of movies like The Hunger Games, right? Because there's
You could probably do it in a book per... like a book per movie, but a series would probably do it better because you just get more time. As long as the show is well funded enough to have good production value.
Yeah. I wouldn't want it to be rushed, you know, especially the later, the bigger books, you know, like this one's actually the novella is the shortest, but you know what I mean? Like I would want the time to be put into it to really bring it
to they get bigger too, and just in terms of like the visuals that would be needed, the optics, like we get kind of towards the end of the third book, we get some sort of scenes that remind me a bit of Game of Thrones, like they would just be magnificent with like the special effects needed and stuff. I'm happy to wait for it, and also gets her a chance to add more to the series too, right? Like it's not done, we're at five books, but she's still going. So
the other thing too, so I don't know if you did this, but so we meet a lot of, you said, a lot of like the baddies in this book, right? The Suriel, is it the Bogey or the, how do you say it?
Yeah, the Boggy.
Boggy, Bogey, and then what's the other?
There's a pronunciation guide in the back. There's the Ator. The Suriel, the Bogey, the Puka, the Naga.
Yes.
Those are the baddies.
I don't think I have that in my book.
Don't you? It's like the very, very last page of mine.
No.
Oh.
Well, anyway, I Googled because I was like, what do all the, they started all getting, there's so many of the bad guys and they started all like looking the same. So I needed to Google. And I will say there's some great fan art out there.
There really is. I think I followed maybe 10 or more different artists that are creators of fan art for ACOTAR.
I could get lost searching. So I looked up, but it did help me. I would say, so if that's something that you struggle with, even if it's someone else's depiction of what they think it looks like, it does help me in my brain, right? You know what I mean? To like picture all these things, especially as we go on. Like there's other people we meet in the next couple of books, like the Weaver, you know, like that. Oh, that's all I'll say. But I needed to like Google, be like, okay, and see what other people, you know, visualize and then put out there into the world. So that it amazes me. People are so talented. And that's where I feel like if this was to be put into film of some sort, whether it's a show or a movie, it has to be done well. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Because there's so many people who would be very not happy if it wasn't. And I wouldn't want it to be rushed. Like I would want it. I would want to love it, right? Like I loved all the Harry Potter movies. I felt like they did such a great job on those movies. So same thing, you know?
Yep. So like if they can't, you'd rather if they can't do it right, don't do it.
I
don't do a bad version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who wants a bad version? No one wants a bad version of something that they
loved.
Right. You know, I mean, I even think that with Game of Thrones, like, you know, I didn't read those books, but I know a lot of Game of Thrones book readers were, well, especially because of how that ended, right? Like he wasn't done writing.
Oh, do you know, I just saw a thing that said that he's going to return in a sequel series.
Someone sent me that too. I'm so happy. Someone just sent me that and I was like, yes.
I think that was just yesterday I saw that and I was so, so happy.
That makes me really happy.
Yeah. Jon Snow for life. He was my favorite.
He went through a really hard time after Game of Thrones.
He did.
Total side note, but I live along the Connecticut shoreline and he actually was spotted nearby where I live. And I guess he was actually at like a, I don't want to say, they don't call it like rehab. It was
a wellness center.
Yeah, it was like a wellness center. Yeah. So he was spotted up and around like several shoreline towns here. But I had read that, you know, I think
he spoke about it later.
Yeah. So I'm happy to see that I love Kit Harington. I'm happy to see, and I would love a Jon Snow.
Me too.
Sequel because
in the north. Oh,
I know.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Yes. But back to that, I know because the author is not done writing those books, right? They kind of had to just like end the series. And while it was still phenomenal, I know that was kind of a sore spot for some people. So I would just, that's my point. Like, I would want I wouldn't want it to just be put out there just to be put out there. Like I am now a full out fan and I would want that world to come to life in the best way possible. Otherwise, not at all. You know,
it's encouraging if somebody like Ron Moore is involved in the development of it because, you know, we talked a little bit when we were talking about The Idea of You, how media and fiction, especially that's sort of geared towards women and young women, which this is, tends to be kind of overlooked, minimized, made fun of a little bit even. So I think there's a risk of that here, right? Is just being like, oh, this is just for like the teens and 20-year-olds who love this series.
Okay. And, yeah. I guess kind of like a Twilight. I feel
maybe
like
not making it as good quality as it could be, right?
So I heard Ron Moore is actually not producing it. Did you send me that article?
He's not directing it. I think I did.
Okay.
He's not directing it, but he was involved with the development.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know what that's called. Like, he's not going to be the showrunner.
Oh, okay.
Like he was for Outlander. He's not going to be directing, but he is involved in the development.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so once it actually gets off the ground, I don't know who will be doing what, but I think that's the critical part, right? Is that the development stage is successful enough to get it to the point of them saying, yes, green light, make this.
Yes. Well, we can only cross our fingers and hope because, again, I would love to see it come to life. I think there's so much potential there. And again, while this is not my favorite of the series, I still love this book. Obviously, this is the jumping off point, you know, of my love for this mm-hmm. series. And I feel like it just sucks you in after you just want more, right? Like her and Tamlin. Oh, okay. That's it. And then it
I
just
do.
Ends.
I kept, like, I just went right into the second book.
Yeah. I think I did too. And then I bought all of them. I was like, I don't want to wait anymore.
Yep.
I really bought all of them and then had them all lined up and waiting so that I could just finish one. I think I remember telling you, I didn't want to stop reading and like switching to something else. That's why I bought them all at once, because I'm like, no, I need it all in my brain fresh now so that I could like immediately finish and then start the next one, and it just rolls right in, right? So that's what I did for the series, and that's what I would recommend doing, because this is a book that is very, same thing like Outlander, it is very plot heavy in the sense that like there's a lot to remember, right? Like there's mm-hmm. a lot. You got a lot of characters, a lot of backstory, a lot of politics even, like as we get further on into...
That's where there is, yeah. Yep.
Yes. And so it can get a little confusing in that sense, right? When there's so much to remember. So that's why I'm like, I need to go right through it. But oh man, it mm-hmm. was so mm-hmm. worth it. I can't wait to discuss.
It was so worth it.
The next book in particular.
Beyond. That was me too.
Number one. My number one was number two. So.
Oh, man.
The starting point.
Yes. And it's almost like reading. I think you could read the first three. Like when I first read them, that's all that was out, the first three. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of like a natural pausing point there if you want there to be. And then you come back in with the novella and book five, because that starts to shift into the focus is on different characters. So everybody's still there that you know, but the focus shifts a little bit, right? So
that
if you
sense.
Did feel like you needed a breather break, I would do it after book three.
That yeah,
and if
I
you
agree
don't,
with you.
You just keep going.
Right. I agree with you. And I feel like the novella is just kind of like a little bit of a bridge from three to five.
You know what it is? It's like, you know how sometimes authors release like little bonus chapters and stuff like that? That's kind of what the novella feels like, right? It's like the Christmas episode, the bonus episode.
Basically, right, exactly.
Yeah,
I feel like it's not really, was there anything in there that was like really pertinent to know?
I don't think so.
Like,
I think you probably could even skip it.
Right. I feel like
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't, because you want more of them. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
I do. Right. Five and the books get bigger as they go, except for the novella. Five is very long, but it's so good. So good.
It's so good.
I think
it's so good.
I think it's safe.
Five is my favorite.
Oh, over two?
Uh-huh. It is now, but very, very close. Very close.
It's very close for me. I think it's going to be two is my favorite because, well, I don't want to say why, but it just.
Yeah. Well, you can say on our next recording
On the
session.
Next one, I'll say why. But I will say, yes, five is right up there, which is why I'm hoping. Oh, God, she's got to hurry up and come out with the next, because I just like even just how that left off, there's so much. These stories aren't done, right? You know what
No,
I mean?
No.
So that's what I mean. If you haven't picked up number two yet, you have to, because there's just so much more story development that happens, and you're just mm-hmm. going to get sucked right into book two, right?
I would say there's a few things behind that. Like one is like this one had to have the world building. There's also just, you know, an author gets better as they go on, I feel like,
and
they sit into the characters better. So, you know, there's a bit of criticism about the actual writing style of this. And like I said, it's a new adult / young adult book, right? So it feels like that to me in the writing. Like it's not high literature, but I don't care. You know, like
I don't care.
I'm reading what makes me happy. I'm not going to pick apart all the tiny little things that I don't like about the way things are written or whatever. Just give me a good story and I'm going to overlook a lot of like those stupid little things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas some people get fixated on those and then can't enjoy the story as a whole. I'm not that.
Like, I'm not I can. Either.
Yeah. So I just think she gets better. Like the language she uses gets better. You know, as the story
absolutely.
Gets on.
Because yes, book five is phenomenal. The books also get sexier as we go.
They definitely do. You can kind of feel like you're aging along with the characters, like from the teenage reader / writer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because again, by the time you get to book five, you are like, woo.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep.
Just
fiery heart on our steam meter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
this one is not. This one is like a. No,
this is tame.
Tame. It's not exactly Fade to Black, but almost.
Yeah. This is very tame. The next, that's what I'm saying. Just got to keep going. I am so thankful that you introduced me to this series. Again, I think it takes the top spot in my favorite, and I haven't read as many books as you, but it really is like the top for me right now. It's just so well done. So I'm so excited to continue our episodes. We're going to be doing one episode per book, although I feel like the novella, we can just kind of lump that into something.
We could, but book five is so long. I was kind of thinking that maybe, well, we're just spitballing here while we're recording. But maybe we'll have some audience feedback incorporated on the one where we talk about the novella, because that'll by nature be a shorter discussion anyway.
Yes.
We got some messages from you guys and they were so wonderful. We're definitely going to include some of them in this podcast. But
and if you don't know what we're talking about, we will have it linked for you as well. But we did set up a place on SpeakPipe where you can leave us messages with your thoughts on the book or things that you want to chat about for each book in the upcoming episodes. You can also head over to our Instagram, which is at LitChicksRead, and the link will be over there in the highlights. So we just want to be able to incorporate you guys and your thoughts into these episodes. And we've got some really good ones, none that apply necessarily to this book, which is why we haven't seen them yet, but some, and we didn't want to give any spoilers, coming forward. So some that we will definitely be including. So if you're just listening to this, we will have the link in the show notes. Definitely go over, leave us a recording because we'd love to include you and, hear what you have to say. So,
yes.
Yeah. So we'll be talking about book two, which is A Court of Mist and Fury.
And Fury. Akamath.
Next episode. So if you love that, that's my number one. So I got a lot to say.
Yeah, so do I.
Yes. So if you want to leave us a message about that, that'll be the next one we're going to be recording in the next couple of weeks. So please do. And I think that's it. What do you think, Cheryl?
I think that's good. And in the interim, we're releasing about every 2 weeks is our goal right now. But you can get your fill of book recommendations and chat with us on that Instagram account that Lauren mentioned, at LitChicksRead. So we'll see you over there.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you guys soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye.